Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker, and we are here on another rainy day here in Atlanta for another show, Biz Rocket Radio, where we get a chance to chat with executives and business owners here in the Atlanta area, learn a little bit of the challenges that they've had, as well as some of the successes and experiences out in the business world, and hopefully pass that on to our listeners. Today we've got a special treat, a couple of good friends of mine that I've known for many years, Bob Hope and Tom Hughes. They are with Hope Beckham, which is a great PR company here in the Atlanta area that I've had the pleasure of working with on several charity events and know them personally well. So we are in for a treat with a lot of great experience and some great stories. If I can get Bob talking at all about some of his experiences, we may be here 2 hours. So welcome, guys.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
So, Bob, maybe we could start a little bit with you, maybe a little bit of background. I know that Hope Beckham started in 1994, but you had a colorful past prior to that. Maybe a little bit of background on you.
Well, my background was colorful. That's a good word. I started when I was in college. I went to Georgia State here in Atlanta, started working for the Atlanta Braves. And since I worked my way through school there, I had the opportunity when I was 24 to become the head of PR and promotions for the Braves. And then after that, immediately Hank Aaron went into his home run chase. So I was the PR director when Hank Aaron broke Babe Ruth's home run record.
Now, that must have been hard to get PR for that.
No, right? Well, it was interesting because, what happened is it was a huge sports story, and also was a huge, social change story. Yeah. So we had I thought it was interesting when Barry Bonds was going through his home run chase that he said, well, how would you like it if when you went in the locker room every night, there were 70 reporters there waiting just to interview you? And I said, buddy, you don't have a clue because we had literally 400 reporters and had chartered planes flying with the team. It was like a presidential campaign. And then after the home run chase, a guy named Ted Turner bought the Braves, and he and I, as promoters, turned out to be two peas in a pod. So I worked for him for several years and was his PR and promotion person, and then left and ended up in New York at one of the top jobs at the largest PR firm in the world. So I had quite a colorful background.
Yeah, and then you decided to go out on your own and make it happen with Hope Beckham.
Right. We came back. Atlanta is just a tough place to move away from. I love my time in New York. It was stimulating. It really is in a lot of ways communications capital of the world, or the capital of the world for that matter in business. And really wanted to work there. However, from a family standpoint, you got to the life, living conditions and the lifestyle of New York's not quite as comfortable as Atlanta, Georgia.
Not as conducive for raising the family.
Oh, yeah. No, I had two girls in high school, and, it was a great experience for them, and I think a wonderful, sort of grounding in looking at the world as a global place and really, feeling the world's bigger than they would if they hadn't lived someplace else, but at the same time wanted to get back home.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Now, I'm going to come back to a bunch of that stuff here in a second, but Mr. Tom Hughes, maybe welcome in, by the way.
Thank you, John. It's hard to follow a living legend in the PR world like Bob Hope, but I'll do my best and be brief as well. I too am an Atlanta native. grew up here and went to University of Georgia and was in the journalism school and came out and literally hit the front lines of PR. My first job at Turner Broadcasting as a tour guide for CNN, believe it or not. And that was probably grassroots or hand-to-hand combat, if you will, in PR with dealing with visitors from all over the world who at the time were very interested in seeing CNN, which was growing at a rapid pace at that time, and gave me a really good introduction not only into the PR business, but the company Turner Broadcasting itself. And I was fortunate to move into corporate PR and then eventually into Turner Sports, where I spent a number of years, and have a few firsts under my belt, which I'm very proud of. Being the first PR person full-time for the Sports South Network, which is the nation's largest regional, and then also the first PR person for the Atlanta Thrashers as we started up the franchise and back in 1999, and moved over to the sports teams, the Hawks, Thrashers, and Phillips Arena. Spent 4 years there, and then been fortunate enough to be at Hope Beckham be 4 years this October.
Oh, happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Yeah, good stuff. So tell us a little bit about the PR world right now. Not an easy place to be, I would imagine, with the way market conditions are and really probably since 08. What are things like right now in the PR world from your vantage point?
Well, I think, you know, number one is it changes rapidly. And I think part of the change really didn't come with the economy as much as it comes with the fact that we can do things like this. I mean, you know, in essence, Internet radio, you know, the internet itself, I mean, 10 years ago really wasn't a factor. Now, you know, anyone can sit in their home and basically send out wonderful video through YouTube. You can, you know, talk to the world. You can Skype. I mean, do all kinds of things that, in essence, it break down the traditional pipelines. You know, there was a time when I started when you had the daily newspaper, in most cases, two daily newspapers. You had radio. You had maybe two or three TV stations, and you had Associated Press and UPI. Well, those, you know, that was the options. That was it. I mean, that's how you communicated to the outside world. Well, today with social media and all the, you know, different things we have, just email alone, you can communicate to the other side of the world instantaneously, regardless who you are. So, you know, what's happened is number one is we're in a situation where it's advantageous to us that we can learn all about these technologies and we can learn how to use them. And yet our clients, you know, need to come to someone to find out how they can use them. And then the other thing, in today's world, the message is more important than ever before. Mm. Because if you have a lot of clutter and a lot of options that people can go out there and, ways they can communicate, it becomes much more important to tell your story well.
I would imagine that back then it was about contacts. You know, back then it was about, can I get on the radio? Can I get on the TV? Can I make a splash in the places where it's going to make a big enough impact where people are going to pick it up? Now, it's how do you get through the noise? I mean, there's so much, like you said, Bob, that's out there in the PR world that you could tap into, the internet and Skype and tweeting and you know, going through Facebook and all these different LinkedIn packages. How much more important now is it to have that message and get through the noise? How do you do that?
Well, I think number one is you need excellent writers. I mean, you just need, you know, it's all of us know when you see a good script. We know when a story is told well, so it's critical to be able to tell the story well. The other thing is what was important in the old days is still important. I mean, relationships are important because it carries much more prestige and much more power now if your story's in the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times because, you know, that's the crown jewel. That tends to drive everything else. I mean, if whatever the key media is based on, you know, if you're in business that really would impact you the most is the, you know, that's the very, very top of the mountain and the rest of it sort of falls down in, you know, underneath, but, you know, flows off of what's up there.
So, Tom, if you're working with a client and you're going out and trying to develop a PR campaign to help get their message out, take us through the process. What does it look like?
Well, I mean, I think first of all, you want to get the client talking or the prospective client, and you want to find out what their goals and their strategies are for their business or for, you know, whatever it is that they're endeavoring to achieve. You want to there's certainly X's and O's, and I think Bob hit on a number of those already. What we call X's and O's, or the blocking and tackling, which, you know, would be press releases, which, you know, somewhat have fallen by the wayside as it comes to, you know, really being looked upon as the one standard for PR. Now there's, as Bob said, you have to be an excellent writer because you're asked to do things in such much more concise, attention-grabbing way. But it's really laying out the objectives and then the strategies about how you're going to communicate those objectives and the messages to the right audience. So you walk them through a strategy, and typically you'll, you know, come back to the table with a well-orchestrated strategy that depends on a timeline as well, to make sure you hit the right objectives and fall within what they're looking to achieve. I think, you know, to emphasize what both of you have been talking about, this is a huge relationship business. And I think one of the interesting areas that we find ourselves in quite a bit is not only getting in front of the right media outlets, whether that be national, regional, or local, but also trying to help create meaningful business partnerships. And that could be, you know, in the community. It could be a B2B opportunity. It really depends on the clients, but I think that really gets back to who you know and what connections that you can make that are meaningful for the client.
Bob, anything to add to that?
No, I mean, I think that's basically it. I mean, one of the things that you have to have in this business, you really need to have anything else, is a plan. You know, it's very, very difficult to find where you're, you know, to find where you're going if you don't have a map to get there. And I think that a lot of folks, you know, it's very hard to get them to sit down and say, let's really think this through and come up with a reasonably thorough plan. You know, that plan may be 3 months, it could be a year, it might be, you know, something that continue on longer than that. But the critical thing is to get started with a plan that makes sense, you know, from a PR standpoint, but also makes sense to the client. I mean, there's typically not just one way to do something right. There are usually 20 paths you can take, and all of them will get you to a good place. You just have to decide on one and go do it.
Besides the plan, what's the thing that people fall down on all the time on PR? What's the thing you see one time after another that they just miss?
I think the thing I find is just the willingness to devote a little bit of time to it. You know, there are a lot of folks who will come to you and say, boy, I want to be in the Wall Street Journal. I want to be in the, you know, Washington Post. I really want to be, I want to make big news, but I really don't have time. You go do it. Well, yeah. You know, they're yeah. They are the subject. Yeah. I mean, they're the voice. I mean, companies cannot speak. Only a person can speak on behalf of a company. So if you're going to, you know, get out there and really say something, you need to have a voice that's willing to devote a little time. And by the way, once they get into it, they enjoy it. A lot of them are a little afraid, you know. First, they'll say, well, you know, I don't really want to be a self-promoter. And I, you know, say, well, is Warren Buffett a self-promoter? No, Warren Buffett's. No, he's not a self-promoter. When you, when you know, somebody's got to get out there and, you
be
know,
the face.
And be the face.
Yeah.
I think the other thing to add to what Bob said is the quick fix mentality, or the quick hit. And what really, in addition to making that time investment or that willingness to do it, is time, and saying that it takes time to set up that interview, or time to put that plan together and execute that plan. And then once that interview happens, it really depends on what you do with that story in terms of how you communicate that out to your audiences. And a lot of times, I think, you know, because there is a little bit of an intangible quality that comes with PR, in other words, we don't actually make a purchase like an ad buy, but we do measure ourselves by ad equivalencies. I think a lot of clients tend to say, you know, it's that what have you done for me lately mentality, and okay, I got in the Wall Street Journal, or I got in USA Today, but where's the sales? You know,
right.
Why doesn't that translate immediately to impact my sales?
Right.
And it's a process. You know, like Bob said, that's 3-6 months and beyond to get some traction, to create that buzz, and then to build on that.
So help me understand one thing, and maybe this is something new. And Tom, you bring up a good point. So you get the PR, you get the publicity, you get the notoriety. Translating that into business, is that something that you guys help with also, or is that really something that's on the hands of the business? I mean, once you get the advertising, the notoriety, how do you turn that into dollars? Is that really their responsibility, or do you help with that too?
Well, I think they're, you know, it's a combination. I mean, you know, what we're doing typically is your best tool. I mean, in essence, if you have a, you know, we had a client that got a really good, you know, long interview. Tom set it up in with, you know, Fox Business in New York. Well, you know, if they had paid for a video, it would have cost them many, many thousands of dollars, and it wouldn't have been as good as that interview, nor would it have had the third-party quality of endorsement that an interview has, because you, you know, people know when they see an interview on TV that you didn't pay them to say exactly what they said. So if they say great things, that's a great benefit to you. However, you have to use it.
Yeah.
You know, you can't depend on it being shown one time on TV and getting all your benefit. You need to sort of take it, and that becomes your video. That becomes, you know, you need to put it on your website so other people can see it. You need to send it to customers and use it in whatever way as if it's much more powerful than a brochure. So a lot of it is, you know, we're helping because we're supplying the tools that work, and then also, you know, but you need to use the tools. Another side of that is sometimes stories do generate sales. We had a company here in Atlanta that just happened to get, we went to New York on a little press tour, and we got a story in Forbes and Fortune all within 2 weeks of each other, or both within 2 weeks of each other. Well, both of them knew they were writing, so they, you know, it was not a problem. Their angles were a little different. Well, off of the Forbes story, a major global company called the company and hired them. Said we read it and, you know, got millions of dollars of work for a global assignment because they read that story. And, you know, there may have, I don't know how many people read that same Forbes story, but, you know, that one phone call was well worth whatever amount of money it took to.
So if you have a smaller organization that maybe isn't as familiar with how to make that public opportunity turn into a big splash, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
How do you make that one article in Forbes or that interview on Fox News Network, how do you make that a big splash? Is that something you guys help your clients with?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a collaborative process, just like Bob said. And I think there's steps that take place leading up to. So in other words, making sure that your constituents or your potential consumers or partners are aware that you're going to be doing that interview. And then what do you do with it, like Bob said, afterwards? And I think, you know, we help counsel, I guess is probably the best word, our clients on how to do that, making sure that those pieces are all in place. So again, it's a well-orchestrated effort, and it doesn't just, you know, be a one and done kind of thing. So, you know, I think it is very collaborative, and there's always new ideas on how best to do that. And to follow up on Bob's point, you know, we had a client also who went to New York and was able to get a national opportunity. And literally as he got into the car after that interview, was already able to track hits on his website and was, you know, pleased as he could be because he was starting to get more traffic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more immediate. But again, it's got to be well orchestrated on the front end and the back end.
I think also it's, part of what we do for a small company particularly. I mean, PR is far less expensive than advertising. If you have a company and you're selling regionally, nationally, you know, for you to do an effective ad campaign of any kind is probably $50 million. I mean, it's just, you know, otherwise, it's great and you love the ads, but, you know, nobody sees them other than your mother and your sister and your family.
2 o'clock, you know, people, it's like,
But, you know, with PR, you're not spending as much money, but you're getting a lot of coverage in a lot of different ways. It's third-party validation, but it's also a level of awareness. So what you'll find is when your salespeople go in or you just walk around town, people will say, boy, you're getting a lot of publicity. We see about you, you know, you guys are really hot. You know, we see your name everywhere.
Yeah.
And people can't remember exactly where they saw it. I mean, one time I wrote a little column in the Atlanta Business Chronicle here in Atlanta, and the next week I went to Rotary Club, and somebody said, Bob, it was a great column you wrote last week in the Wall Street Journal. That's all great. Yeah, people don't remember. They've read all of them.
So,
it was one of my best ones. That's right. But, you know, people see your name around, and it builds your brand. It just basically, it does the same thing that on a smaller company level that a Coca-Cola or you know, Microsoft or whatever, you know, ideally wants to happen to their business worldwide is for people to know who they are when they walk in the door.
So who are your clients? I mean, clearly you guys work with large organizations and corporations and such, but if you were to identify the typical group or organization that comes into you, what do they look like?
Well, I think they're all over the waterfront. I mean, we have a consumer side of our business, and we have a corporate side of our business, and then in our case, we do a good bit of sports work mm-hmm. and also a good bit of charity work because we like to do that in the community. But yep, you know, from a consumer side, we do a good bit of retail. We have Belk Stores, which is a huge and very successful regional retailer. We have Aaron's, which is national and going international now, doing extremely well. We have Comcast. We have law firms, Greenberg Traurig. Mm-hmm. We have a good long laundry list of clients. We do project work for if you name the company in Atlanta, we've probably done projects for them over the years on different right. things when they feel like they need our unique expertise. We get called in a lot. One of the areas that I missed is when somebody has a communications crisis, when they have a crisis internally and it goes external and they want to sort of keep it calm, they'll bring us in to sort of deal with the issues because it's new to them. Even if they have a law firm involved, it's, law firms deal with, they don't deal with the media on a regular basis in a crisis situation. So we're, very experienced at sort of keeping it calm, just understanding that the media is not out to get you, that,
right.
The level of cooperation, what to cooperate with, how to sort of keep the, the information accurate, honest, out there, and not let it, get out of hand. So, those types of things are big, big opportunities for us as a business, even if they're painful opportunities for our clients, because when a crisis happens, it can either almost go unnoticed and you can comfortably get through it, or it can totally get out of hand and ruin your business.
Okay, so I'm gonna take you through five different media outlets, some of them very technical and new age, some of them more old school and been there for a long time. Bob, tell me the value, 1 to 10, 1 being not at all valuable, 10 being if you can get exposure there, it's like the best, okay? So LinkedIn.
I'd say probably 5. I think LinkedIn is good in that you're creating your own personal network and it's nice to be out there, but it's, it's, nobody's going to look at it and say, wow, gee whiz, you're on LinkedIn, because you control that, yourself. I mean, okay. it's media, but it's sort of not media.
Okay. Facebook.
I love Facebook.
You're on it all the time. I know.
I just think it's the most amazing thing. I think you should be, I'm going to say 6. So it's certainly better than LinkedIn. And you need to be out there. And it's certainly a very positive way of making a statement that you're embracing the world, that you're not sort of hiding under a rock. And, we enjoyed it, our business. It always tickles me to look and see who's following Hope Beckham. I mean, we're sitting there always. I tell everybody that one of the founders of eBay follows Hope Beckham. I have no idea. We don't work for eBay, but that's one of our followers. So you just I'm very big on Facebook, but is valued media that gets the third party endorsement that really want top media to give you. It's certainly not. People aren't going to look at it. Oh my gosh, look at that. We read about you on Facebook.
Yeah. Right. Right. Tweeting.
Oh, I hate tweeting. Yeah.
It doesn't give you enough time to express. That's Bob's problem. It doesn't give him enough time to tell a story.
I think I'll answer that question, but I think all of these things, I think what's really important, John, is to establish a balance and consistency. And I think that is one of the biggest challenges that we face when talking with clients, because they all think they need to be out in all of these different mediums, and yet they don't, it gets back to something Bob said earlier, they don't want to make the time investment to do that in a reasonable way, but also, what we do is help establish some credibility. And I think you lose your credibility very quickly if you do not put forth the resources. And I'm not saying that, every CEO needs to sit down and do that. I think that's unrealistic, but you need to have someone with authority, a decision maker who is out there in a consistent basis, who can serve as a company spokesperson in the right way. Now, tweeting, in my opinion, is very social, to get back to your question. And I put that in terms of importance at probably a 4 or 5. I think what I would suggest is to, look at, it gets back to looking at the right mediums to get to your audience. Right. And what a lot of newspapers and TV stations, radio stations are doing now is they've created their own platforms for people to reach out to them actively and have that, you know, ongoing to, you know, one-to-one dialogue with them. So there's, whether it be a virtual newsroom or news desk or something of that nature, I would say, you know, do your research, know, you know, the mediums that you're trying to go after and what, how it is they prefer to be contacted, what mm-hmm. types of interactive opportunities are there where, you know, you could be a viewer, a regular consumer and interact with them, and quote unquote pitch something. And I think, you know, PR people are accepted more in that forum now than they ever have been. So it's really interesting, but I, you know, I get back to the Facebook thing too. And I think all of those things, you know, pardon my language here, but they're a big time suck. They yeah. really are.
Yeah.
And you really have to balance what weight you put in each of those areas. And I think if you, again, if you're strategic about it, you can maintain the presence, but not go overboard,
right.
you know, in one area or another.
So let's get to some more traditional media. So let's say local newspapers or magazine type thing.
I mean, I may be a traditionalist here, but I think newspapers tend to drive media coverage. I mean, in essence, they are your best press release. You know, if you get a major story in the, you know, Atlanta Journal-Constitution or, in our case, or the Business Chronicle, then other media reads that story. And it's just, you know, and the difference in that and radio and TV is that radio and TV can be fleeting. You either see it or you don't. Newspapers sit around. You know, people pick them up and they read them at their leisure, so it doesn't, you know, there's no real restriction of we have to be there at this very moment in order to see this.
What about on the national scene? Same thing, magazines and newspapers on more of a national, higher, lower, more important, less important?
I think for most businesses, the national publications are more important. I mean, that's because of the prestige that in addition to the you know, the sheer coverage. But at the same time, if you have a major story in a national publication, that impresses everyone in your local market. I mean, they look at
right.
it and think,
right.
wow, you know, look where they were.
Yeah, and I think the other piece of that, too, is the immediacy, you know, through all of the different social media and everything, you know, getting back to the Twitter question, these publications obviously have the credibility, as Bob mentioned, and the shelf life is longer, and the benefit that they have is they're able to really get behind story and deeper into coverage around a story, as opposed to, you know, breaking news, which is not what they're set up for. And I think newspapers really are the same way today. They have the opportunity to kind of dig into something a little bit more mm-hmm. in depth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they use, you know, they utilize the social media to help, you know, whether it be break something or you know, get something out there quickly, but then come back in the print version with a longer version of that that has some more depth and meat to it.
Yeah. I saw a speech by, I guess, a couple of years ago by the producer of NBC, or of CBS Evening News, and he said that one of the things that they always have to assume whenever they run a story is that whoever's watching already knows the news element of it, that they already... That, you know, they already know what happened, so they have to come up with an angle or additional information that provides, you know, their perspective or something new for the viewer.
That's a TV type,
right?
Right. So similar newspaper, it's just in print versus in video.
Well, I think that you know, in today's world, I mean, newspapers or magazines are in the same boat because, you know, they just don't have the immediacy. They can't quick, you know, they're not out there first with the news.
Yeah.
News. You know, my oldest daughter was in Japan with her family during the earthquake.
Wow.
Well, you know, we get a phone call from her, and then, you know, that was probably my most disciplined time of watching how news breaks and how, you know, first of all, which shocked me, you always hear about immediate news, was she calls and said, "We're having a horrible earthquake. I've got to go find the kids. I'll call you back later." You know, I'm watching the news closely on the internet to see when a story comes out of Japan. Well, I figure it must not be as bad as she thought because nothing hit the news for 30 minutes.
Wow.
And it was Al Jazeera that came out with it first, and they were accurate, which, you know, was sort of interesting in today's global perspective of, of the news, but then, you know, everybody else followed, and obviously it was a terrible earthquake. Yeah. But then, you know, just watching how it evolved and how quickly the story had to get beyond, there's been a major earthquake in Japan. The news coverage started going off in all different directions, whether it was the nuclear plant, you know, the tsunami, all of that. I mean, just, you know, it kind of, you know,
it's almost like an earthquake's not necessarily news. The tsunami was big news, and then the nuclear power plant just took it to a whole
other
level.
Yeah, and just all the, you know, the personal stories and the there's so much going out there that they, you know, there's a lot more texture to the news as it evolves today than there ever has been in the past.
So, last two medias, I guess. So on a ranking, local newspaper, what would you say, 1 to 10?
I'd say 10. I mean, I think if you're not a big deal locally, you're probably not going to be a big deal anywhere.
Okay. How about national?
10.
Okay. How about radio? Radio stuff like this, terrestrial radio. How important is that?
I think it depends. I mean, it's all very important. I mean,
I agree.
You know, it fits in an overall mix. You're very seldom. You know, it's hard to judge a baseball team based on one home run. I mean, you got to get some singles, you got to get some doubles, you got to, you know, keep your ERA down. I mean, in essence, media is the same way.
It's a whole package.
It's got, you know, the story has to be coming at you in different directions in order for people to remember it. You know, typically folks aren't enormously affected on a Broadway by one story that appears. It's, you know, it's that story being repeated over and over in different forms that really gets the point across.
And last thing is TV. How important is if you can get TV exposure, is that much more valuable than, let's say, local newspaper, or is it just one more place?
I think it's a part of the mix. I mean, you know, some things are very powerful if shown graphically. I mean, just, you know, great pictures, but other things work just as well on radio. I mean, it's just, you know, it's the nature of whatever you're covering. It's, you know, something looks really good and impressive, put it on TV. If it sounds better than it looks, put it on the radio.
How do you prep your clients for interviews? I mean, if they're going in and doing interviews, you must do some, hey, don't freeze up or don't say this. Or
sure.
How do you make them not mess up?
Well, we actually go through quite a bit of media training with clients, and it really depends on the comfort level of the particular client, what kind of track record they've had with media interviews in the past, if they've had any exposure at all to a lot of exposure. So we do media training all the time, and Bob has mentioned one that some of our corporate clients that we've worked with this past fall, we took them on a media tour in New York, and prior to that, there's actually two of them going together, and we do that quite often. So not only do we have to train them in how to deal with these types of interviews, and that would be print and electronic, but also how to interact and play off of each other in a particular interview, which, you know, is a nuance that you really have to, you know, not take for granted. So it's everything from preparation to mannerisms, techniques, and dealing with difficult questions, how to really approach an interview with a strategy so you can get your messages boiled down, speak in sound bites, and get those messages across.
And obviously, you guys have had a lot of experience in a wide variety of areas. And Bob, I think some of the stories about the early parts of working with Ted Turner and the Braves and how to promote baseball and these kinds of things are so interesting. What's your most memorable story about dealing with and working with Ted Turner?
Yeah, obviously a lot of memorable stories, but I think one of them is just the philosophy. I mean, Ted basically, if you look at the definition of news that I think the editor of the New York Sun in the 1800s came up with, he said, if a dog bites a man, that's not news. But when the man bites the dog, that's news. Well, that's, you know, that holds true today. I mean, things that are unique and interesting. So with Ted, the great, you know, willingness he had to do interesting things in order to get himself famous. I mean, Ted's attitude was, if I'm famous, the world will come to me. If I'm not famous, then I have to go find people. So he wanted the world to come to him, and he was willing to do anything that was legal and somewhat moral. That's right. It was fun. I mean, it worked. I mean, one time he came to me and he said, Hope, he said, I want to be on the front page of the New York Times tomorrow. You got to get me there. If you don't, you're fired or something. I knew he wanted to fire me. And so I said, well, give me a few minutes. And I came back to him and I said, well, Ted, you know, I'm thinking about it. I think we ought to change the name of the Braves to the Eagles. And he said, oh, people will go crazy. We can't do that. And I said, well, you know, we don't have to do it, but let's announce it. And so that afternoon we leaked it out that Ted was thinking about changing the name of the team to the Eagles. Well, we were all over the place. People were going nuts. It was on the front page of the paper. And then, you know, a couple of days later we came back and said, well, that was a bad idea. But it's just, you know, and he was willing to, you know, that doesn't work for everybody. But in his case, it was his personality. It, you know, in essence, we used to use a phrase, it's better to go down the street as a village idiot and be noticed than not be noticed at all. Well, you know, that worked very comfortably for him. I mean, certainly he was brilliant, but it's, you know, he was willing to step out and do those things. But and some of them were, you know, just outrageous. I mean, they were just the types of things, you know. And also, I found out it establishes an attitude. Part of your audience is the media. And back then, the anticipation of the media of what he would do next was tremendous.
Yeah,
I mean, they loved
it. Can't wait. Yeah.
You know, if somebody else did it, it wouldn't make the newspaper. But because Ted did it, it was just, wow, this is wonderful. We had a thing with the Hawks one time where Ted came to me and he said, Bob, he said, my father-in-law and mother-in-law are going to be at the basketball game Thursday night. He said, don't do anything crazy. And so you interpret Ted, which means come up with something really good. So what we did is, you know, basketball is great because you have this, you know, 14,000, 15,000, 8,000 people who all see what's going on. They're very confined so they can see what's happening. Well, we had these two actors, and one of them was like a, you know, dressed up like a 90-year-old man, and the other was a really lovely blonde young woman in a mink coat. And so this 90-year-old man comes in, he has his cane, and he has the young woman on his arm, and yeah, they're sitting on the chair seats right next to the court. You know, right. They're walking on there. Right. Well, everybody in the entire building's all looking at this. This is unbelievable. Well, the second time out, she jumps up, she takes off her coat, and she has a red bikini on underneath. She starts running around the court. He's chasing her with a cane, and she runs and jumps in Ted's lap. Well, I mean, that picture was on the front page of the paper the next day. I mean, right. It was the kind of thing, well, if somebody else did it, people would think, wow, this is insane. What in the world's going on? Or, you know, but when Ted Turner, if it happens to him, then it's part of his personality.
Part of
it's reflective. You know, it's the fun personality that he had.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good stuff. When you go through those experiences with your previous kind of life and what you did from a PR perspective, how have you seen that impact you in this you know, business that you know that you and Paul have kind of built and developed for yourselves?
Well, I mean, I think all of, you know, number one, we've had dog years of experience. If you work with Ted, you get 7 years for every 1 year you put in. But you know, what you find is you realize that there's no single personality that deals well. You know, just tell people to sit down and, you know, be yourself. You know, don't feel like you have to, you know, you don't want to be a corporate stiff. You don't want to be a, you know, come across as phony. You just want to come across as you are as a person and be a spokesperson of your company as if you were talking to your next door neighbor. You know, don't feel like you have to paint any kind of picture that's not really you. And by the way, your company, if you're the leader of your company, is a reflection of you. I mean, it's companies tend to be a reflection of the leadership of those companies, mm-hmm. and let that happen. You know, don't hold back, because there's nothing, you know, there's no single right image that you need to have out there. Images continue to grow, they continue to evolve. Even if you look at a big company like Coca-Cola, I mean, when you had Roberto Gazzuetta as the CEO, it had one type of classy image about it that was, you know, almost a diplomatic image. And then, you know, they had a couple of CEOs come in that were a little more awkward, you know, and obviously it's not their, I mean, not their fault that the company didn't quite have that image of diplomacy they had, because, you know, Roberto Gazzuetta died and they just stepped in and filled the role. And then you had Neville Isdale come back, who had that gracious diplomatic image, and that, you know, reflected all the way through the company. And then you now have a new you know, new leader who has that, you know, the image of strength and knowledge of the business, and that, you know, kind of, you know, goes down through and permeates the entire organization. Well, that happens in any company. I mean, just, you know, whoever's at the top tends to sort of set the tone for how the rest of the company is viewed.
Tom, you had a point?
Yeah, there's actually two follow-up points I want to make that really helps.
Do you have a better story than the girl jumping into Ted Turner's arms?
Because I wish I did. I wish I did. I have a few Ted stories, but not as entertaining as that one. but the you know, to follow up on what Bob said, the value of PR is like he said, it's driven from the top down. And I think, you know, a person like a Ted Turner or a CEO or an owner, young entrepreneur, whatever the scenario, if that individual values PR and places that at a high level, that's where we can be most effective. And I think the other part of that is to understand the value of outside counsel. And bringing that in at the right time, at the beginning of that process, whether it be to come up with a great idea or a stunt, or to be involved in the planning stages for that new product launch, that new store opening, the launch of a business, to be able to have PR work in a complementary fashion to help steer that process is critical. And like Bob said, it does. It starts from the top down.
You know, one of the things that I think sometimes we underestimate the value of in today's world is just the power of words. You know, I mean, if you look at, you know, there's certain phrases that everybody knows that just stand out. I mean, you know, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn, or, you know, give me liberty or give me death. I mean, yeah. These things are said at different times and they just take on a life of their own. Well, the power of words, the power of a message told well, concisely, can change the world in a lot, you know, in a very positive way. I mean, one of the things about CEOs, you know, particularly when I was in New York and certainly now in Atlanta, is you deal with these top people and you realize personality-wise they're all different. And you try to think, what is it that makes them all great? You know what? And one of the things you realize is they all have this ability to take very complex messages and just hone them down to their essence. You know, right. They can say something that most people take four sentences to say, and they can say them in seven words, and it's has great clarity. Well, if you think about that ability to communicate, it's very important in business in a lot of ways. Number one, it makes you more effective outside, but it also makes you more effective as a leader inside. Because if you're leading a company that has 50,000 employees, has 1,000 employees, or has 50 employees, you know, the clarity of the message at the top needs to be able to filter down without being, you know, convoluted in any way. So that, mm-hmm. you know, ability to come up and say the right things powerfully in the right format and in the, you know, through the right tools is very, very important.
You know, Bob, you told me something a long time ago that stuck with me, and that was that a lot of PR is the willingness to be the go-to person, the willingness to put yourself out there and be the go-to person when the news or the environment or whatever leads back to you. How many people do you really feel that, you know, are looking for PR, have that willingness to really be that go-to person?
I'd say that once they realize they have to do it to achieve what they want to, most people can do it. But it probably is the most difficult obstacle. I mean, it's like a basketball team without a point guard or a football team without a quarterback. You know, you can't just say, well, you know, we want to win this game, but, you know, we're going to do it without a quarterback, or we decided right. We don't need a point guard. Somebody's got to step up and tell the story and take the lead. And it's, you know, luckily, particularly with CEOs of big companies, they, you know, they got to where they are because they were natural leaders anyway. So right. Once you explain to them the reasons, they typically buy in.
Yeah, and I think the trick with that piece is to not only understand that you have that role, but to embrace that role and to not to relish it from an ego standpoint, because there's a fine line. But to be able to know that you're out there when the news is good and deliver those positive messages. But by the way, stand up and take accountability and be that credible, you know, the buck stops with me voice in tough times as well. And I think there's, you know, certainly from a PR standpoint, there's coaching that outside counsel can provide that we do very effectively, as Bob mentioned earlier, in the crisis situations, and also internally, as you're relying on your PR staff as a authoritative, you know, credible counsel through the day-to-day stuff as well.
You know, Tom, your experience I found interesting in working with a couple of organizations that were in the infancy stages in terms of PR, never done it before, and you got them up and running. What was the hardest part? I guess I'll start with that question. What was the hardest part about getting those groups up and running from a PR perspective?
That's a loaded question. No, I can't. You know, you have challenges in every situation. I think first and foremost is to establish the buzz, the initial awareness, and how you go about doing that. And I think the challenge is you are limited with the types of resources that you have. So, and I'll use the hockey team as a perfect example. When we announced that the team was coming, we still had a year and a half build-up process to the actual team hitting the ice. Well, we had an arena that was being built, Phillips Arena, so we had some interesting developments along the construction front, and you know, as the management came into place, but those will only get you so far. And I think that's where some creativity comes in, where you have to use the resources that you have and start to develop the personalities around the team and the organization, because we didn't have players. And at the end of the day, in sports, players are really your biggest asset that you have to touch the fans and get everybody excited in the business community, et cetera. So really there has to be a willingness from an individual standpoint of someone to step forward and be kind of the face of the franchise. And you have the same thing, I think, in the business world. As Bob mentioned, you have to have someone who's willing to be that person who is saying the buck stops with me and is genuine, is out there consistently, but also present every time when they are making that connection.
And Bob, the experiences that you've had with athletes, I mean, I know Dominique Wilkins, Dominique Dawes, Hank Aaron, just to name a few. What's been one of the most rewarding things that you had in working with athletes in the PR world?
Well, I think one of them is just, you know, I've been lucky in that the athletes I've dealt with, you know, have been very, very high-quality people. I tell a story sometimes about when Hank Aaron was going through the home run chase that we had Murphy Candler Little League Day at the stadium one day. And the head of the Little League, whoever was organizing it, called up and said, we have a youngster on one of our teams who has leukemia, and we'd love to get a picture made with Hank Aaron. So we arranged it before the game, and unbeknownst to us, I mean, really think about the picture appearing in the paper, but the next day there was this picture of Hank and the little boy in the paper with a cut line under it saying, you know, what the situation was. Well, suddenly our phone starts ringing, and every parent of a child, you know, who was ill in any way, I mean, they were just calling up wanting their kids to meet Hank Aaron. So I would arrange before the game, take Hank, you know, take him down to the dugout, and there'd be five kids one day, and then there'd be seven one day, three. I mean, it was just, but every day, you know, it was a logistical challenge. Yep. And I just kept thinking, this is a pain. You know, some of these kids are fooling us. They're, you know, the parents are just using an excuse. They're really not sick, and you're being a little cynical about it. Well, I went to a National League meeting, and in the meeting they said, we have a new rule that kids aren't allowed in the dugout before the game. So I thought, oh, this is great. So I'm going to tell Hank, because he had all these interviews, and you know, really time was becoming a challenge to him. So I sat down with Hank, and I said, Hank, I can save you 30 minutes where you can go back in the back of the clubhouse and just relax before the game. I said, we're not allowed to take kids in the dugout, so we don't have to bring these sick kids down here every day. And Hank said, no. He said, I want to do that. I really, you know. And I said, well, Hank, you know, not all of them are really sick. And he said, I know that. But he said, I really, you know, some of them are, and I want to spend that time with them. And so I said, fine. And I was not exactly pleased with it, because I'd either have to take them down.
Or
I was
either
doing it to somebody else, sign somebody every day. And so we did that. And then, you know, years went by, and I was in the Los Angeles airport, and the man walked up to me. He said, you're Bob Hope, aren't you? And I said, yes, I am. And he said, you don't remember me. And I said, well, I really don't. And he said, well, several years ago, I called, and I told you that my son was, we lived in Orlando, we were coming through Atlanta, and we were on our way to Houston to have heart surgery. And he was 10 years old or however, and he said, I told him I'd like for him to meet Hank Aaron, and that'd be a big thrill. And you said, fine, you met us and took some kids down. We had Hank signed the ball. He had his picture made with us, spent some time. He was really great. He said, it was the greatest moment of my son's life. And he said, the next Thursday or whatever, he said, they operated on him. He died on the operating table. Mm. And he said, when we buried him with that baseball in the picture. And I just wanted to tell you that story and how much it meant. And I started thinking about it, what a tribute that was to Hank. Because, you know, Hank wasn't, you know, seeking publicity. He was doing it because it was the right thing to do. Yeah. He was doing it against my advice. I mean, it just, I thought that, you know, just some really great quality human beings that you run into. The, you know, the interesting thing about, you know, being in the spotlight or being under the microscope, which sports, you know, tends to do to you, mm-hmm. is that it brings out either the best or the worst qualities of people. You know, mm-hmm. you just see them bigger than life, either as, you know, not being such great people or really being fine human beings. And, mm-hmm. You know, some of the folks like Hank Aaron, Dominique, you know, Phil Niekro, I mean, all these people are just great, great human beings.
Yeah, great story. Well, let's wrap up with last question, and I'm gonna start with Tom. With your pearl of wisdom, if you were to... just give us one pearl of wisdom for our listeners, what would that be?
Oh, boy. I would say the main thing to think about when you think about PR is preparation and execution. It's two things, but really is to put together a well-thought-out strategy. But the execution piece of that, I think, is critical. And I think it's a really good analogy to sports in terms of being prepared with how much you practice and ready yourself for that game or that situation. And then how you execute that, I think, is equally as critical. And if you don't prepare, if you don't practice, you won't be ready. And when it comes time to deliver, you're going to fall flat on your face. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a pretty basic analogy, but one that we really, really take for granted.
Perfect. Perfect. Bob, how about you? Pearl of wisdom.
Okay, my pearl of wisdom would be that one of the most important things you can do in your business is to tell your story well. And that you need someone who's, and you know, professional at figuring out what that story is and then how to get it out to work with you to do it. And that's a fairly simple thought, but it's you know, amazing how many people don't do it.
So develop the story, know the story, and then present it properly and make sure mm-hmm. you know how to do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's good stuff. I appreciate you guys taking the time to come by today.
Thank you.
On this cloudy, partially rainy day in Atlanta. And if there's anyone who needs to get in contact with you guys, are there any contact information you like to get
out? I tell you, it's pretty easy. You can go to www.hopebeckham.com, one word, H-O-P-E-B-E-C-K-H-A-M, or you can give us a call at 404-636-8200.
All right. Well, thanks again for your time. And to the audience, thank you for tuning in. Until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. We'll be right back.